always kept lost. It was the garage.
My pappy said, son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving.
That's a funny, funny car.
Tell him it's your car and you do what you want with it. I own this car, I do as I please. I also own the highway, my taxes paid for that. They're both mine. I own the highway and I own the car. I own everything!
Big trouble. That's the rookie Suarez up and over Regan Smith, the big one in control of the trial.
Podcast. Ho, 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 and Merry Christmas. This is Eric Stahl.
And I'm Daryl Scott, and welcome to a special Christmas edition of Throwing Wrenches Podcast.
This is holiday episode duh.
That's right. We heard so much feedback about our first Christmas show, if you will,
yeah,
and how epically awful it was.
I thought it was pretty amazing. So if you haven't listened to the Christmas episode from 2018,
yeah,
Daryl and I told holiday stories, basically, of sliding on the ice and losing the Christmas trees off our car as youths.
Yeah.
Youths.
Yeah. Two youths. Bottom line, I didn't think it was that bad,
yeah,
but apparently it was kind of long and drawn out and boring. But isn't every show?
Yeah, but is that from your wife? Did Sarah say that?
I think that's the Sarah demographic.
Yeah.
No, actually, I forget. We had a couple people who were like, I don't know if you guys can top last year's Christmas show.
Yeah.
We're going to top it tonight.
Yeah, we're going to try.
This is a show in a year in the making. We've had so much R&D. We've had research. We've had all kinds of intense market studies.
Yeah. Oh, definitely some feedback groups or whatever you call that.
Focus groups.
Focus groups, yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of focus groups, tonight's episode is all about our favorite movie picks. Car movies are just movies that, you know, on a snowy evening where you got the whole family indoors and you got maybe you got old cousin Albert's over and
yeah,
he's into cars. Everyone just like sit down, have a nice little beverage, hot or cold, whatever your choice is, and gather the family around and watch one of these great movies. And then we can talk about it on, you know, social media
channels.
There you
go. And with that, we ask you to get the chestnuts roasting, throw another log, a Yule log in the fire, and sit back and listen as Daryl and I go through some classic car movies. And this episode is inspired by our recent viewing of Ford versus Ferrari. We said to ourselves, hey, we like some car movies. Let's just dream up a couple that we want to talk about. So folks, instead of us telling stories about our youth, we're going to talk about car movies. So
right.
I hope that makes you all happy.
Nice Snuggie, by the way. I like your Ferrari
Thank
Snuggie.
You. Thank you. Well, you know, do you got the Ford one? Oh, I can't sell.
Yeah, I do. I do. I had to get 4XL tall. But they make them. They make them.
I just like the footies. Can you hear them?
So cozy.
Yeah.
So cozy.
All right. So get the hot toddy. Get the eggnog that your cousin makes with lighter fluid. Let's get it going. All right, so, Daryl, we could go top to bottom, but I'm going to start off with maybe my sleepers and work my way up to my favorite Christmas movie, or my favorite road movie, okay?
Okay, so each one of us, just for the record, we've selected five motion pictures, so that'll be a total of 10.
10 movies.
So we'll do kind of a top 10 list. Everybody can follow along. We'll list them all, put links to IMDb and all the movie nerd stuff up there.
And the Internet Movie Car Database, which I will be honest with you, Daryl, I used frequently in making
nice.
This list. All right?
All right.
Thanks
all right.
to Daryl. If you go back to like episode 3 or 4, you'll find all about the Internet Movie Car Database.
Nerds.
All right, so what is your number five pick, Eric?
My number five pick is the Mad Max movie from 1979.
The world gone mad. The only law will be a renegade squad of suicidal cops.
He's my prisoner, and he's not walking out that door.
And the open road will be controlled by gangs of glory ropers. Is a cop, one of the best.
Where does it run to get you? Scoot jockeys?
I didn't even know that a Falcon could look so sexy in science fiction. I watched this movie several times, never realized I'm watching a domestic car rolling around out there. This is Mel Gibson, back when he's like a teenage kid, long before he's getting pulled over in Hollywood and declaring racist statements.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson is a tough cop. His wife and family get killed, and he basically drives all over the Australian countryside in these weird, like, stop motion, fast pitch filmography things where they're kind of like zooming everything up and just makes a really raucous road movie. It's a lot of fun. Now, later on, the Mad Max movies turned into these giant killing machines, like science fiction thing. But this movie was still in its purest. It was a road movie.
So they did what? Like, I think two after that plus the remake, right?
Yeah, and the remake isn't bad. Have you seen it?
No, I've heard it's good. I think it's the same director as the original, right?
It is the same director. And the character who was the original guy who kills Max's family is the main protagonist in that movie.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of cool they brought him back. I mean, he's basically this giant lump of fat, but it's cool that they brought that character back for the purists.
So I haven't seen the original one in years, and I don't think I ever watched Thunderdome, maybe parts of it or whatever.
For Tina?
I do like the soundtrack's pretty good. But so is Mel Gibson a police officer?
Yes. Okay. Yes. He's I think he was like a detective or inspector or something like that. So he's a high ranking guy, and something happens, a deal goes down, his family gets caught in a beachside resort, and it's just the killing of his family is just a weird video thing that happened there. I mean, they kind of make it just a slow motion and kill the whole family right there, and then of course he just goes insane at that point.
And then the rest of the movie is just him driving around looking for vengeance.
Yes, basically
for blood.
Yeah, but like I said, those Falcons are the star of the show, and I would be lying if I didn't tell you that I would love to do a paint scheme like this with the yellow, the red, and the blue on the Celica or even something like that. Just because it's so darn cool.
So there was a company in Australia years ago that sold like body kits.
Oh yeah,
because the Australian Falcon is just different enough that it's still awesome. It's not.
Yeah, because there wasn't a Falcon made in the U.S. in the 70s.
Right. I think 70 it went away. It was the last year, 69, something like that, and it turned into like the Maverick in 71.
Yeah,
that was their kind of entry level. But the Australian stuff, they kept up the nameplate, and they actually kept a more or less a same size as the original one, and probably awesome 302 or 351 V8s in them. And there was a company that sold body kits that you could make your car look like the Mad Max. So for a long time, there were people importing those into the States. There was a guy, when we lived in Evansville, Indiana, there was a guy who showed up at a car show with one. It was like in primer, and he's like, I've blown my life savings importing this goofy car because he was such a big Mad Max fan.
Yeah.
And you could tell there were like the trim was all missing. I mean, he was having to spend a lot of money fabbing parts up. But the cars are amazing in it. And is that the one that's got the supercharger?
I believe it has a supercharger. And it's got that cool fin on the back window, above the back window.
Nice.
Yeah. There's just something about that look. Like I said, to me, it was just a science fiction car when I was a kid. But to realize it's actually a legit automobile, it's pretty cool.
All right, so that might show up as a car of the week here in the coming months.
I'll keep an eye out for it.
We'll see.
All right, Daryl, what's your number five movie?
All right, mine is a little more tame than the dystopian Australian future, but mine's a 1988 film called Rain Man. Barry Levinson directed it. Probably everybody remembers. Dustin Hoffman plays an older gentleman with autism, and Tom Cruise is in it, and a lovely Italian-American actress, Valeria Golino, who was phenomenal. But the movie must have got a bunch of Oscars. I think Hans Zimmer did the score. He got best music. Dustin Hoffman got best actor. Barry Levinson, director. I mean, it just sweeped at the Oscars. But the car was really the star of that movie. It was also the root. If you follow the film, not to give a brief synopsis, but Tom Cruise's character, his father passes away. He gets found in this will, and he the only thing his multimillionaire father left to him is a 49 Buick, and it's because he and his son, he and his dad argued over taking the car out when he was in high school. And it split up their relationship, hated his father, moved out of town. The rest is history.
You know this car?
I know this car.
How do you know this car?
Definitely know this car. It's 1949 Buick Roadmaster, straight 8, Fireball 8, only 8,095 production models. Dad lets me drive slow on a driveway, but not on Monday. Definitely not on Monday.
Who's your dad?
Sanford Babbitt.
Sanford Babbitt?
10961 Beechcrest Street, Cincinnati, Ohio.
That's my address. I mean, what is it with this guy? Hey!
Lo and behold, the car plays a major, major theme in the film because it's how he finds his brother, and they go on a road trip. It's a wonderful road movie, especially in this 49 Buick Roadmaster convertible, which is just a gorgeous car.
Yeah, it's a big, it's cool. The convertible part is, that's iconic.
Yeah.
Was it even on the cover of the movie poster and stuff?
Or? It might have been some of the posters, I think, with the, him and Tom Cruise, Dustin Hoffman driving in it or walking in it or leaning against it or something.
Yeah.
Great car. And I think it came up for auction. They used, I think, two cars in the making of the film because they actually did drive a fair amount. It's all filmed on back roads. And it's really great cinematography in the film. But one of them came up at auction. I think one was nice restored and one was like a driver that they just kind of used for some of the shots.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it sold for, but it wasn't that much. It was probably like $100,000 or something. I mean, for a movie car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't that much. Wonderful film. And if you're just into good stories, this is another one of those films that I don't think could have been made today. If you watch it, I don't know. It might be softened.
I don't know. Green Book was made. I mean, it's kind of a road movie. I mean, you got the, I don't know.
That's true. That's true. And what, there's another one. The Coen brothers did one called Inside Llewyn Davis, which is kind of a road.
I haven't seen that.
It's decent. But it's one of those that it drags.
Yeah.
Everybody today wants a film that's like, you know, fast cuts, jump, yeah, you know, like keep your attention, edge of the seats. This is one you have to invest 2 hours and be like, it's a story.
No, when there's a long cut, when there's a long take, I tell my kids, I'm like, look at that. They just went 4 minutes and didn't cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just went back and forth or whatever. I mean, that's art form right there. Just doing fast cuts. You and I could make a movie if we just did fast cuts, you know, like just keep going back to our face shots. And
I know.
Of course, we wouldn't want those face shots. We probably wouldn't get the Oscar for that.
But no, probably not.
Yeah.
But
so that's right. That is a classic choice, Daryl.
Why, thank you. What's next on your list?
All right. So I got a little goofy on this one. I didn't even think so much about it being a road movie or a car movie. I went down to my CD collection. I was kind of looking. I'm like, well, what in my CD collection or DVD collection is a car movie? And it didn't occur to me until I looked at it, but Better Off Dead. It's a movie.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Better
Off Dead has John Cusack as a young teenage boy who's trying to make the ski team. Everything's just not going his way. His girlfriend Beth has broken up with him, and his world revolves around Beth. After you get past that initial Bethness, and there's a lot of it, there's a car that's sitting in the front of the yard, and the dad lectures the son about the car that's been in the auto cocoon.
Lane, Memorand. I would like to take a meeting with you at some point tonight to discuss the future of that vehicle, which you purchased several months ago, yet has darkened our driveway immobile ever since.
The car is a 67 Camaro, and throughout the movie, Lane Myers, he gets into like races with a 73 LTD wagon against some boys in a 65 Ford Falcon. Falcons are coming up here
they
twice
are, for yeah, me. It's a recurring theme.
Anyway, these the two Asian characters, let's just put them, learned how to speak the English language from watching Howard Cosell in The Wild World of Sports.
Oh, no, not now.
What do they want?
They want a race.
Lane Meyer, back here from Green Bay.
See, here's a good example.
I don't know.
Two brothers, one speaks no English, the other learned how to speak English from watching The Wide World of Sports. So you tell me, which is better, speaking no English at all or speaking Howard Cosell?
The chances seem slim that this once great has the nerve, the desire to win that he once had.
You must obey the proper speed limits. A car is not a toy.
Obviously admitted the fate.
And if you've seen this movie, you don't forget this stuff.
It's great.
So anyway, so Lane Myers is just, he's getting his butt beat by the girlfriend. He's getting his butt beat by the boys who speak like Howard Cosell. But he meets a French girl and she helps him work on his Camaro. And lo and behold, by the end of the movie, he gets the girl, he gets the Camaro rebuilt, and it looks like $1 million.
Oh yeah.
And it's a great movie, and a car plays a central focus in it.
Hello? Hello?
Ah, bonjour.
Monique, hi.
Comment allez-vous?
No, thanks. I already had breakfast. What are you doing to my car? What are you doing to my Camaro? Monique, what are you doing to my car? It's already screwed up as it is.
Screwed up, eh?
Yeah, very.
The greatest thing about this is I looked up this movie and found some other stuff. There was a website dedicated to this car.
Yes, a long time ago.
It wasn't that long ago, maybe 5 years ago, but it's down now. It's betteroffdeadcamaro.com.
Okay.
But apparently the crew master of that show had bought the car and given it to his son after the movie, and the car was just, it was Bondo. I saw a picture of it before the guy started restoring it. So guy hauled it all the way down to Florida, redid the whole thing, gutted it, and it looks amazing. Now it's in Colorado, and I guess it goes to car shows there. I can't find the link, though, to anything active on it right now.
It's funny you mention that. I grew up watching that movie. My parents love it. I got it on DVD. My dad, being a car guy and a big influence, he also loves 80s high school, like Ferris Bueller.
This is a great movie.
All those movies, right? And so this one was one of my dad's favorites. He watches it every Christmas.
Yeah, it's a Christmas movie.
It definitely is, because there's a great scene.
Christmas.
I won't go into it. But that 67 Camaro is, especially every guy, every high school guy who sees that, there's that montage where Monique, his girlfriend, comes over.
Yeah, Monique.
The exchange student. Yeah. Who later becomes his girlfriend.
I thought they all spoke English, but there's something wrong with her.
She helps him fix the thing up, and it's so cute because she's wearing like coveralls, and they got grease on her nose.
Yeah. Oil just mysteriously just like runs in their face.
Yeah.
Which, let me tell you, you'd be covered in that stuff, and you would not be happy and smiling.
Not necessarily. But the whole montage where they start building the car,
yeah,
it's fun. There's like a Howard Jones band song and everything. It's the best 5 minutes in movie history, because at the end of it is this glistening jet black 67 RSSS Camaro. And you're just like, sweet. And in real life, that would take like 10 years, $100,000. But back then it was like, oh, sweet. I want to get a girlfriend in a car.
Yeah. A French girl.
Yeah. That never happened.
She loved American cars. Whatever. She loved the Brooklyn Dodgers.
That's a great, the clip too at the end, or like where he picks him up, Lane Myers picks up the neighbor.
Yeah.
Sorry, I blew up your mom, Ricky, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some great one-liners in that movie. Yeah. Awesome choice.
Yeah. Seek it out. Thank you. That's my number four. Daryl, can you top that?
Man, I'm just going to throw cold water on this. my next pick, my number four.
First off, Daryl and I didn't conspire on this whole thing.
No.
So we said, let's keep it secret from each other and not share. So that way we wouldn't have to like ruin each other's vibe.
I picked that. No, I picked it first. All right. So my number four pick is another long-winded tale. Of love and loss. No, it's actually 1989's Driving Miss Daisy.
Oh, okay.
No, I hate Titanic. Actually, no, it's pretty funny when they. Never mind.
I'm sorry. Driving Miss Daisy.
Driving Miss Daisy from the poor Chrysler in the beginning that goes over the hedges, which causes Miss Daisy to have somebody drive her, to the beautiful Hudson, that cranberry maroon colored Hudson Commodore, to the 55 Cadillac. All the cars in this movie span time with the lovely and talented Jessica Tandy and Morgan Freeman.
I'm nobody's fool, Hope.
Why, no.
My husband taught me to run a car.
Yes.
I remember everything he said. So don't you think even for a second that you... wait, you're speeding, I can see it.
No, Miss Daisy, no. We're only doing about 19 miles an hour.
I like to go under the speed limit.
Yes, but the speed limit's 35,
The slower you go, the more you save on gas. My husband taught me that.
He ain't hardly moving. Might as well walk to the takeaway.
Is this your car?
No.
Do you pay for the gas?
No.
All right, then. I find some may think I'm losing my abilities, but I'm still in control of what goes on in my car.
Everyone probably remembers this movie. Hans Zimmer also did the soundtrack to this. Little Hans Zimmer theme. You got Falcons, I got Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hans Zimmer also did the soundtrack to Days of Thunder, which almost made my list, but didn't.
He did all the Nolan movies, too.
Yes, all that good stuff. True friendship story, great heartwarming pair, and who doesn't love Morgan Freeman? Awesome.
Find me somebody who doesn't like Morgan Freeman.
It's probably somebody.
Probably
out
one of his ex-wives when he dated that 16-year-old girl.
Did he?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
For real?
Oh, yeah.
I knew
it was like, it was like a niece.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was blood, so he's allowed to do it. But it was...
That's weird.
Anyway, so...
That just got weird. All right, so before I knew that, I liked Morgan Freeman. Everything's cool. Wonderful film. And I love that. It's another one of those period pieces that starts out in the late 40s and goes all the way to like 1970. And they do a pretty good job throughout the film of... There's scenes where, like, there's a Christmas party that her son, played by Dan Aykroyd, and his wife, Patti LuPone.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Aykroyd was in a serious role there.
Phenomenal. I think it was one of his first serious roles. I think he was nominated for an Oscar. Didn't get it. He's, like, drinking out of a Coke bottle, like the classic hourglass Coca-Cola bottle. This is before they like did the retro ones.
Yeah.
So somebody had like props, dude had to do it. And they were playing like a Perry Como record and like 50s decorations. Like there was a lot of care done to make sure that you believe that this was back in the day. I always liked that. Great film. And I want a 55 Cadillac because of this film to this day.
Man. Yeah. All right. So from here on, they're getting like spicier, right?
Maybe. Actually, no. The last three are pretty good. So,
all right. So,
I swear I'm not old.
I'll do some fact checking on the Morgan Freeman thing before, but I think I'm right. I think he's a creep.
He might be.
Yeah.
He did get in a really bad wreck with somebody who was not his wife. Yeah. One time too.
That might have been when it all got snipped out.
I remember there was something. All right. Go for it. What's your number three?
So I'm going on to number three. I don't know that I did these first three in particular order because I think maybe Better Off Dead might have moved further up the list, but I will say this. Number three is The Hunter. It's a movie.
Ooh.
I don't have the date on this one. I'm surprised I didn't do that.
I think it's 1980.
Is it?
I believe.
Steve McQueen plays America's last bounty hunter.
Steve McQueen is The Hunter. The true story of Ralph Dawson. A man who's just as soft-hearted as he is hard-headed. But he's not a cop. He's America's last bounty hunter.
Where'd he come from?
The courts have given him the right to go anywhere.
So, if you know this movie at all, to me, when I was a kid, there was a scene where he shot a guy with a fat belly with a beanbag gun, which, like, always resonated with me because he didn't like slow motion. But there's also some great scenes where he's chasing a Pontiac Trans Am through a cornfield in Manteno, Illinois, by the way.
That's where it was filmed?
Yes, that's where the cornfield scene was filmed, with a combine. So if you watch the movie and you'll see this, first off, to drive through a cornfield as a kid from the Midwest, that was like mind-blowing. Like, I could do that? You know, I thought I'd like break my windshield of my car. I probably would.
Probably would have.
Yeah, but anyway, they literally take this beautiful black Trans Am and blow through this cornfield. McQueen somehow gets, you know, conveniently in a combine with a threshing head on it. I don't know how he just didn't destroy this whole thing, but it's a pretty cool scene. But the coup de grace on this whole movie is Marina City Towers, which are right across from Wacker Drive in Dearborn in Chicago. It's an iconic spot. I mean, I've been to the spot so many times. You know, you're shopping in downtown Chicago, you cross over there at Dearborn on the bridge, and you look over and you see the towers. They were the cover of a Wilco album years ago, if you don't know it. There's a spot in the movie where, I don't know, maybe 8 stories up, 10 stories up, a car just throws it in reverse and just shoots off the tower through the parking garage and lands out in the Chicago River. And it doesn't even seem possible. But man, every time I stand there in Dearborn and I look up there, I'm like, a car, you know, fell off there. And that,
yeah.
What are we talking, 30 years ago now?
Yeah. Yeah.
35?
40 almost. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's definitely, I think all Steve McQueen movies in general have a little bit of a car, a little bit of a tough guy thing in them. But,
sure.
But this movie as a kid always stuck with me.
He drives a beautiful beige
it's an old
49 or 50 Chevy convertible.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And there's a scene where he's like trying to parallel park it, and he just like nails everybody's bumper.
Yeah, because he kind of treated it like a piece of junk.
Yeah, and the whole time you're like, oh, that's an awesome car.
That's a cool old car.
Steve McQueen doesn't care. Yeah. You know, that might have been his last
or second to last? It was getting close, yeah.
It's like, for him, I think it was that, and John Wayne, it was like The Shootist. You could tell they were getting up there, and like they had some health trouble.
Yeah.
But they're still just... I still would not want to mess with Steve McQueen at any age. The dude was just a badass.
Yeah. I mean, there's some classic Steve McQueen, but I don't watch enough of them because they're, you know, you can't run down to the DVD store and rent them. I don't know if I can get on Vudu and even rent Steve McQueen movies. I have to look and see.
Good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was great. And I know everybody likes Bullet. Bullet's a great car movie.
Yeah.
And even if you're not a huge car nut, it's a decent movie. That's one of those that's played out. I hate to say it.
Yeah. And I think Bullet was the obvious choice. I just think The Hunter has those two great scenes.
Yeah.
I think the combine scene, to me, maybe it's a Midwestern thing, but I just always thought that was a great scene. But again, we live near Chicago, and you've seen that spot many times. So I'm sure even when you see that spot, you think the same thing, right?
I think of the car flying out of there. They did it a couple years ago with another film that was filmed in Chicago. And it was super controlled, and it was like, I can't remember what it was. I have a friend of mine who runs a movie production business where he supplies period correct cars for films and TV shows. And it was doing a casting call for anything 70s, 80s. It was some movie that was set in like 83. But probably a lot stricter today with like EPA regs.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Safety.
Tanks got to be empty or sealed and all that stuff. No fluids can get out in the. They probably had to spring load it. And, you know, it's probably no engine in it, right?
Exactly. Power wash, everything. Back then, it was probably like, you got this Cutlass? All right, just put it in reverse
hey,
and hit
Steve
it.
Steve McQueen wants to do a movie. Let him do whatever he wants to do. Because right. McQueen did direct part of this movie, too, as I guess. So.
Well, and he did a lot of stunts when he was in Bullet. He did a lot of driving stunts early on. And the studio was like, absolutely not. He's like, I know what I want.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this here, Chase. And they eventually like put a stop work thing on the film.
Oh, really?
And he had to have his buddy, Jim Hickman, I think, or Bill Hickman, do the stunts for the rest of it. And he actually was later in, French Connection, Seven Ups. He was a stunt guy in that. So
French Connection's a great movie.
That is a good one.
Didn't make my, my car movies. When I started using the Internet Movie Car Database, which I will tell you, and we said this on the last episode, is a website that Daryl talked about way back early on some of our episodes. What is it? IMCB or D? Or
yeah.
Internet Movie Car Database. Just search that, and you can find almost any car in any movie. My daughter wanted to know what kind of car was in, the Grand Budapest Hotel. You know, these Indian Tata cars, something like that. And you can find those freaking cars on this website. It's nuts.
Somebody's got screenshots, and then they have the exact model. Yeah, it's great. It's good stuff.
Anyway, so check that website out. And that's my number three. What do you got, Daryl?
All right. Well, you had a couple pieces of Chicago history in there, Marina Towers and things like that, which is not that far down the street from the House of Blues.
It's on the same block, I believe.
It is. So if you've been to the House of Blues, you definitely have heard probably the voice or seen the likeness of one Elwood Blues, who is half of the Blues Brothers. And that number three movie I picked is The Blues Brothers.
Great
because
choice.
You know what? It's one of those movies. We were just talking about this, I think, Thanksgiving. That's a film that if it's on TV, you're flipping channels and it's a Tuesday night and at 9 o'clock, you're like, well, I'm not going to bed now.
I'm watching this.
You got to watch it till the end.
Yeah.
Blues Brothers, anybody who grew up in the Midwest, specifically Illinois or Chicagoland, that's your movie. And it's a great film, funny. Of course, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi are just phenomenal. Everybody in it is great. Music, soundtrack's awesome. But it's about the cars, man.
It is. It's stunts. And I guess this movie had more more destroyed vehicles than any other car or movie in history or something?
I don't know what the count is. Somebody out there could probably look it up and tell us, or if they're a big trivia nut. It has to be in the hundreds. I mean, just ridiculous. John Landis, even the director, who later went on to do like Three Amigos and I'm trying to think now. Well, he did Animal House, a bunch of great movies. He actually said that the film is really about the cars and how they dance. And he didn't say it in like this like weird interpretive dance, kind of like modern, whatever. He's like, those cars and the stunt drivers, they were doing dance moves. I mean, you look at the ones, especially, so the car that the Bluesmobile, if you will, is supposed to be a 74 Dodge Monaco that they bought from a police auction.
The car's got a lot of pickup. It's got a cop motor, a 440 cubic inch plant. It's got cop tires, cop suspension, cop shocks. It's a model made before catalytic converters, so it'll run good on regular gas. What do you say? Is it the new Bluesmobile or what? Fix the cigarette lighter.
Lovely, lovely film. And that film is awesome because all the police cars that are in that movie, whether it's the Bluesmobile or that, they're probably big 440 cubic inch Mopar blocks, just the best police cars of the world. And every one of them is wide open throttle the whole film.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a stretch on 55. And I remember growing up as a kid, and it's 1978 or something like that.
Yeah, when they were filming.
Yeah, they blocked off. And we used to listen to WLS as a kid. I remember that being in the news.
Yeah.
They're filming this week or whatever this weekend, so you won't be able to be on 55. None of us knew. I mean, if you watch that movie, the chaos that goes on the interstate. And there's cars spinning out everywhere.
The ones where they go down the median and they come flying back up, I think that was in Route 12 because my folks, of course, I grew up near that area up in northern Lake County, and I think my dad said that there was one day where they were on Route 12 and they had shut the same thing, four lanes of traffic down. And like, sorry, folks, we're filming this movie. And everyone,
and
of course,
Daily Building.
Yeah, Daily Plaza downtown. I mean, The reason that this film works is because they got carte blanche to do whatever they wanted in Chicago, especially some of those scenes where they're driving through Lower Wacker.
Yeah.
And there's one scene where the car just flies over the top of another cop car.
Yeah.
Like nicks the Mars light on the top and just lands and keeps going. And you're just like...
Down Lower Wacker or something, right?
Yeah, as they come up out of the ramp.
Yeah.
And you're just like, my God, how do they do that? They really did that stuff.
Yeah.
But that's because... Back then, stunt, there was no CGI. It was like, you got a stunt guy who had a pack of, like, who looked like Stuntman Mike from the Tarantino movie. Pack of Marlboros rolled up. He's like, what do you need? Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And they just did it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bridge scene where, don't they go over a bridge?
Yeah.
It's like going up and they, I mean, obviously when suspend whatever that thing is, that bridge that comes up, there's like a giant foot gap. You could never even make that run at it. You'd like chunk the front bumper and rip the engine out. But they make it look like they go. But somebody propelled a car over that thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they did it by horsepower or spring-loaded or what. But
you almost wonder. And I wish – here's how much of a movie nerd I would watch a two-hour documentary.
On the making of the Blues Brothers?
Yeah,
I could agree with that.
It's a phenomenal film. Love it if it's on, and especially the unedited version. Supposedly there is a three-hour version that's like a director's cut.
That'd be fun to watch.
It'd be fun to see.
Or maybe there was a reason they took that stuff out.
Maybe it's terrible. I don't know. But definitely. And if I had all the money in the world, I would get a 74 Dodge and make it look as crummy as the Bluesmobile.
Yeah.
Totally would do that. But anyways, that's my number three.
That's Eric. A great selection. And honest.
Thanks.
And here I say honestly. That's another one of my drinking game phrases.
Well, you don't use that a lot.
I do say, last episode I said honestly. I think I said it four times. So I'm going to stop being so honest. but that was on my honorable mention list. So
okay.
I had a couple movies on there. So I want to talk about that one, but I'm glad you got it in there. All right, I'm going to go to my number two movie, and I think this is legit number two.
Do it.
I'm going to go to James Bond.
Ooh.
It's the biggest. It's the best. It's Bond. And beyond.
James Bond, The Spy Who Loved Me. And I think this movie's 1977.
Okay.
This is Roger Moore, and Roger is with Barbara Bach. She's a Russian spy. First it starts off in the Alps, and then it goes to Egypt. Spent a lot of time in Egypt. We run into Jaws. I don't know if you remember Jaws. He was in the...
Yeah.
Couple
Richard
of
Karn or whatever.
He's
no,
got some giant,
whatever his name is.
He's got some giant teeth. He seems to kill a lot of people, but he somehow... James Bond, whether it's Roger Moore or anybody else, he always seems to get knocked out very easily by him. But anyway, I digress. This movie also starred a White Lotus Esprit. As a kid, my brother and I collected some of these Corgi cars. Corgi would come out with the larger die-cast, and they would have like the little die-cast. And Daryl,
yes, Do you have one?
I have my original Corgi.
You're kidding me.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, he actually has an old Corgi.
It says Corgi.
Let me see this.
Yeah. I still have this car from my youth.
Oh my gosh.
So
Corgi Jr.'s 007. You see if you got the Bond logo. You gotta take some shots of this one.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
But that came with a larger Corgi Esprit that actually had a button where you could click and the little fins would come out. Ailerons or whatever those things are at. Anyway, and it had missiles that would shoot, and you know, before kids worried about losing an eye, you could actually shoot a missile out of
toy. Right.
But this movie starred the Lotus Esprit. And there's a scene where in the Bahamas or Jamaica or wherever he's at, they go flying off a dock, and this Esprit just goes full tilt, goes just soaring into a bay and just sinks into the bay. I mean, that was the most honest. I mean, we talked about the Blues Brothers. We can talk about all kinds of stunt. This car was actually built. They spent $100,000 making a real Lotus, a submarine. They put battery packs in it. They put three motors on the back of it. They put those hydroplanes on it. And this car was made to actually go underwater.
That's insane.
It's crazy.
So how much would you, the $100,000?
It spent $100,000, and it actually had real missiles put in it.
I'm trying to do the math for inflation. What did you say? Probably
1977?
I don't know, $700,000.
You think?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll do calculations.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, but Google it, look it up. when that car goes flying into the water, it's one of the greatest things ever. And then at one point, typical Roger Moore schlock, they come out of the water after shooting a missile out of the water, you know, at a helicopter and conveniently hitting this thing and blowing it up. But he drives out, you know, rolls the window down. I think he probably says, having a nice day or something, you know, something
goofy.
Something tacky like that.
Yeah. Anyway, good day for a swim or good day for the swim. Something stupid.
I still wish I had that model, the larger one.
With the
hydroplanes on it. Man, I tell you what, there's just something about this car. And that's why last episode, that was my car of the week.
That's right.
Yeah.
It was a little later, but like you said, the body style did not change in that model run, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, and looking at our model here for demonstration. So when we were talking about the 93 or 94 model that I had, there was more softer edges on the car. And you look at this one from 1977, and this was the hard edges. I mean, this car didn't have the style, I think, and the softness of those newer ones. So.
Well, and if you put that next to another sports car of the time, just looks like that's from the future.
Yeah, I agree.
It's kind of that classic wedge, like the Countach or DeLoreans later kind of emulated. These guys had it first. Beautiful car. Yeah. Wonderful choice. And when do you contract to have yours built?
I'm working on it. But, hey, okay. It gets weirder than that because this brings us to our Moment of Musk. All right. I know you've been waiting for this one. It's a Christmas episode, Moment of Musk. Here's what you don't know about this Bond car, and I'm going to tie this all in with Elon Musk. This is from Autoblog. The story begins in 1989. I'm going to read this whole thing because I think it's a pretty good story. A couple from Long Island had a barn find. They paid $100 for a locked storage unit, and in that locked storage unit, they found a Lotus Esprit covered under blankets. They didn't know what they had. They didn't realize that this car was actually the car from the 1977 film. It wasn't until this vehicle was actually loaded up in a truck and hauled out of there, a trucker actually said to him, "Hey, you got the car from that movie." They sat on it for a bit. That $100 represents $207 in 2019 dollars, Daryl, just in case you're wondering.
Okay.
They didn't realize what they had, and what they did is they put it to an auction at Sotheby's in 2013, and they said, "Hey, guess how much they made on it, Daryl?"
I don't know.
It's a non-running movie prop. Okay?
Okay, so there's no motor in it, it just looks good.
Yeah.
I don't know, 70 grand?
No. How about $997,000?
Holy cow.
Yeah. It may not surprise you to find out that the buyer of this auction was Mr. Elon Musk.
Seriously, he bought the Bond car.
Yes. Now, Elon later said he was disappointed to learn he couldn't actually transform. And what he's going to do is upgrade this Tesla electric powertrain and make sure he can transform it for real. He even admitted on Twitter that the... Man, I can't even say this. Giorgetto Giugiaro.
Giugiaro? Giorgetto Giugiaro design?
Influenced the Cybertruck that was introduced here earlier this year. That is your Moment of Musk. Elon.
$100, man. $100 investment in a storage war locker turns into almost $1 million.
But who, see, here's the funny thing about this. And when we, I think we did an earlier episode, you know, a year or so ago, and we talked about John DeLorean, and I started getting on like snow machines. I mean, this was a rabbit hole. I just, you know, I started looking up this car because I do like this car and I like it
for what
it is. I had no idea that this car has relations to the Cybertruck.
No, but it's crazy now that you think of it. Maybe you and Elon are cut from the same cloth.
Maybe so.
Maybe you're a genius, you just don't even know it.
I doubt that's the case, but anyway.
Maybe you need to look at your portfolio.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So anyway, that was fun, and hey, you know what? I could have picked a lot of James Bond movies. For some reason, this car was always my car. My brother was always about the DB7 with the ejector seat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But this was my Bond car.
Beautiful choice, and I can't wait to see what the larger Corgi goes for on eBay now. That's like probably uber collectible now.
Yeah, I'll be looking later.
Especially, you could sell your little tiny one to Musk.
No, I want to keep this one.
See, everybody has to have like the little model of their car to show with the big car at the car shows, right?
This has patina, man.
It does. It's still got dirt in it.
It does.
Should probably wash that.
I don't care.
All right. Okay.
Daryl, what's your number two?
Number two. My number two film is a radical departure from the feel good films I've picked so far.
Ooh, something rough.
This is dark. I was a big Stephen King fan growing up. Read Tommyknockers, all 7,000 pages of it. I read Thinner. I read a bunch of them.
Oh yeah, Thinner was the one that when I was in high school.
It was dark.
Everybody read that one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the one that resonated the most with me was Christine. And Christine resonated with me because it was about old cars. It was about male teen angst. It was about kids getting beat up in high school and not fitting in. And all those things that, as an adolescent young male, that kind of just resonated with me. But then he also fixed up an old car and it ran over his bullies. And I'm like, this is cool. John Carpenter, who directed 1978's Halloween, in 1983 adapted the Stephen King book Christine to the silver screen. The film is phenomenal. It's Keith Gordon is the guy who plays Arnie Cunningham.
Yeah, and he was such an 80s weasel.
He was.
Yeah, but he was perfect for this role.
It worked. And he throughout the film, transforms from kind of this nerdy, kind of science geek, academic, to kind of this...
A killer.
Weird killer. Yeah. Anyone with an evil car can relate to this film.
Lean machine! Did they let you out early?
Yeah, that's right.
Arnold Cunningham?
I'm Rudolph Junkins, state police, detective. Oh, look, I'm just missing a study hall. I gotta get to work.
No, I don't care about that. I just want to ask you about your car. You do nice body work, Arnie. I thought this thing was totaled.
Who told you that?
Well, hell, everybody. Local police, your mom and dad, your girl. Cute girl, baby.
Yeah, well, it wasn't anywhere near as bad as it looked.
No? The report said they punched holes in the body. Damn if I can see the fill.
Well, you can if you look.
Yeah.
It's right over there. And back here. And I've been real lucky with parts to replace the entire door on this side.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, see the way the paint doesn't quite match?
Nope. A hell of a job. Hell of a job, Arnie.
Well, thank you very much.
Even if you saw it years ago, watch it again. It totally holds up. And you'll pick off things like Alexandra Paul, a very young pre-Baywatch Alexandra Paul is in it. There's some other just good bits. Robert Prosky, character actor, he's great. And he plays Darnell, the guy who runs the garage. And the soundtrack was done by John Carpenter, probably on his basement.
Oh, but, you know, Carpenter was in his wheelhouse at that time. He was doing lots of great movies. A Thing.
Yes.
I'm trying to think what else. But Escape from New York.
Escape from New York was his.
And so there's a great scene in that where the car, like, rebuilds itself. This is before CGI.
Yeah.
I don't even know how they did that scene.
The scene, okay, so that's the one where it's like, okay, show me.
Yeah,
and he,
yeah,
like, car rebuilds him. It looks like it's pounding the dents out that the guys beat it up, right? What they did was they actually
crushed
it. Yeah,
because some guys come into the shop and it started like beating up. Okay, nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're done beating up him, and clearly that's not working. So they're going to, the only next best thing he cares about is this car he's been working on, and they go and beat it up and smash the windshield. I think they went through 13 or 14, 57 or 58 Plymouths during the making of this film, which is really sad, but
it's like a burial ground somewhere.
Yeah, but that's also driven up the price of 57 and 8 Plymouth Furies
because it was 13, or because of the movie.
The film,
okay.
The film is especially huge in Sweden and huge in Australia. Guys will pay ridiculous amounts of money to export one of those, and then the first thing they do is they paint it red and white like the car in the movie.
Really?
Which apparently is not a factory color combo. And people get offended, like the Plymouth purists, which I happen to be. They get all offended because they're like, that's not a factory color. That's terrible. But they go for like $100,000. It's ridiculous.
That is hilarious.
Bottom line is, fear the Plymouth and don't beat up the nerds who were in shop class.
No, that was a great movie. And I think that was one of those ones that was like a staple of HBO on Saturday nights. I think I probably watched it 50 times.
I did too, as a young kid. So when I watch it now, I'm like, why am I I know every inch of this film. But to answer your question, I got sidetracked.
Oh, sorry.
Where the car rebuilds itself, they crushed a car
in
a compactor, and then they reversed the footage. That's how they did it.
How'd they... I have to watch it, I guess. But like I said, pre-CGI, it was a pretty amazing scene.
And I wish that was the case. I wish you could actually have a little fender bender or scrape something and then be like,
show me.
Spirits.
Show me.
Love it. Also in the beginning, that scene where they're all rolling down the assembly line.
Yeah.
And they're playing like Bad to the Bone by George Thorogood.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an
anachronistic. That's right, yeah. Didn't somebody die in the making? Wasn't that like they're in the factory? Somebody died, and then
yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the guy goes in there. The car's rolling down the plant.
Yeah,
which would be the Mack Avenue plant in Detroit, for anybody who's a nerd like me.
Nerd.
That's where they're made. There's a guy who's like, okay, quitting time, whatever. And the factory worker goes in there, and he sits in the front seat and lights up a stogie. And clearly the car did not want to be smoked in, so it rolled the windows up and killed the guy.
Okay.
Totally normal.
Yeah, that happens every day. Yeah. It's kind of like finding the Coke can in there. You might find a dead guy when you get to the dealership, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right, so hopefully your next number one top pick is a little bit lighter than that.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and add a little levity to the show.
Thank you.
This might be Better Off Dead was a comedy. There's no doubt about
right.
that. So my final choice, I'm gonna say it's the Cannonball Run. And Cannonball Run.
Wow.
Hal Needham and Burt Reynolds worked together on a couple movies, and they did Stroker Ace, Hooper.
Oh yeah.
And I wanted to put Smokey and the Bandit as one of my selections, but of all the Hal Needham and Burt Reynolds movies, Cannonball Run is my favorite, and it has guys like Roger Moore in it.
Yeah. I am here to participate in your little jaunt to California.
Well, of course. If you would sign in here, please.
I realize the novelty of a major celebrity entering your little race, but kindly resist the temptation and keep the media coverage to a minimum. Thank you.
Jackie Chan, Terry Bradshaw. I mean, this...
Oh, yeah.
This, it, well, Sammy Davis Jr.,
Sammy.
Dean Martin. Yeah. I mean, you name it. There's all kinds of celebrities in this movie. But this movie, at its core, is the Cannonball Run is a race that goes from New York to Los Angeles. And as a matter of fact, I think that record was just broken here recently by a Mercedes AMG that was averaging 109 miles an hour across the country.
Yeah. What does he mean? He made, was LA to New York in 25 hours or something?
Something
like that.
Crazy.
Yeah, they said the car, I think, peaked at 193, according to the GPS. Yeah.
Anyway, but that's not legal. So The Cannonball Run is just a fun movie based on this fictitious race that doesn't really exist but does kind of exist. And Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise stars as two guys who go in an ambulance, and they decide they're going to use that as their way to get through the country without getting speeding tickets. Because back then, it's all cops with radars, you know, sitting, and it's all CB talk and bears in the air and stuff like that. This movie is a riot. This movie is fun. I can tell you, there's not many car movies that I laugh so much at. I mean, the Blues Brothers is right up there. But to me, this is cars. This is fun. This is racing. This is all elements of amateur racing, sports cars. I mean, there's a Lamborghini in it that's stupid. But,
yeah.
But, you know,
just, the one, not Barbara Bach, Catherine Bach.
I think
who's
right.
Who's Daisy Duke.
Yeah.
I think she's in the Lambo.
Yeah. And then Jackie Chan is in what I had as a Dodge Colt as a kid was basically a little Mitsubishi hatchback. I mean, he's driving this thing with jetpacks and LiDAR and everything else, you know, going down the road, seeing in the dark. It's a riot.
Is it the second one?
The second one sucked.
The second one's terrible.
And I don't think Hal's in that. Is Bert in? Maybe Bert's in it.
I don't remember Jackie Chan's in one that's got a turbo and like.
That's the first one.
That's the first one. Okay.
Yeah.
Does he go underwater in that?
No, but at one point he gets into the Mint 400 and gets into some desert racing with some buggies and stuff. He gets stuck on the side of a mountain, and that's when he presses the button. And of course he's got his Japanese tech guy with him. He's like making all these weird noises, like zug zug zug, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just so
fake
funny
computers.
And just bizarre. I love that movie. I actually own that movie, and my son, I made him watch it. It was required viewing at the Stahl household.
Good for you.
Yeah, and he laughs his butt off at it too, not even knowing who all these people are, but just Burt Reynolds and that little sideways glance, laughing at the tree huggers.
Yeah.
Because it's all about making fun of the green people. You know, it, the protagonist in this movie, and I say protagonist a lot now lately, is basically a tree hugger, you know, who's trying to stop the race because it's so bad for the environment.
I mean, they do have a point, but it's also amazing.
Yeah.
And I need to dust that off. I think I probably watched that as a kid, and then I watched it in college. I haven't seen that in probably 10, 15 years.
I think if you're a fan of classic stars, you'll see these. Why is Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr., two priests driving a Ferrari. It makes no sense.
None.
Yeah, you know,
none.
But, you know, and when Burt Reynolds tries to tip off a cop on him, he goes,
"Come flying through here in a few seconds, and the two men driving are responsible for the victim lying back here in this ambulance."
Victim?
A flasher victim. You want to know the worst part?
What's that?
They're dressed as priests.
Go on.
Well, I guess they think it's a little kinkier, you know, dressed as priests.
God damn, that's sick. I'll handle this.
Oh, one more thing. I think they're armed.
Damn, I hope so. It'll give me an excuse.
Flashers!
Bye-bye! JJ, you son of a...
Out of the car, both of you. Now. All right, hit it.
Hit it? Hit it?
Freeze or name your beneficiary.
Beneficiary? Officer, I sincerely hope...
Hey, pay
you're
no
not
attention to him.
He's been locked up for 6 years in that monastery, and he don't know what he's doing. I don't think both of his paddles are in the water.
6 years is going to seem like a summer vacation when the state of Missouri gets through with you. And you, Shorty, where'd you get all that jewelry?
Why do you call me Shorty?
Because you're small.
Small.
S-M-O.
Highly recommend. That's my number one.
Excellent. I will, in your honor, in the next couple of months, I'll probably watch that.
All right. Well, I'll loan it to you if you don't own it.
I won't watch the second one, but...
I haven't seen the second one probably since 1983, so maybe it's better than I think, but if I hated it in 1983 and I loved the first one, it must have been really bad.
Probably. Yeah. I will say that Smokey and the Bandit is a guilty pleasure. It is not appreciated by the other beautiful person that holds some...
Oh.
Stature in my household. My wife.
Some stature.
She will actually, like, leave the house if that's on.
Seriously?
Yeah. She's like, this movie's terrible. That, according to my mom, my grandfather, like, they went to see Smokey the Bandit in the theater.
Yeah.
And she said my grandfather was, like, in stitches the whole film.
Yeah.
And I could just imagine, like, Hal Needham and, he was a stunt coordinator, right?
Yeah.
Is that kind of his famous background?
Yep.
The driving and stuff in all the Smokey movies are great, but Stroker Ace is another one I need to get out and dust off again too. That's good stuff.
That's on the list.
R.I.P. It's another great guy, Burt Reynolds, who we lost recently.
Yeah, we'll never. I mean, I think of all the great actors with who's the guy who plays Deadpool and all that stuff.
Ryan Reynolds.
He might have that smug charm that Burt Reynolds had. He could maybe be that guy, but. Burt Reynolds definitely is a kid growing up in the 70s. He was just a star. Every time you just see him, you're like, oh, it's going to be great. Whatever Burt, just Burt walking on screen, like, going to be great. Even if it sucked, we still thought it was going to be
still
great.
Still watch it. All right. All right. And my number one pick here as we whittle down to the finals here, this is a film. Wow, it's that old. 1998's Ronin. Yeah, Jonathan Frankenheimer, same guy that did 7-Ups and French Connection, famous for some car chases in those movies.
Oh, yeah.
Ronin, which of course I think refers to, is it like a samurai?
Yeah, it's an independent samurai who's lost his house or something, so now he's a freelancer.
Like a mercenary?
Yeah.
So probably not cool, but movie's about...
But deadly.
But I just put Euro trashed, because every car in the movie gets trashed. Robert De Niro... who I always love.
And it's peak, too, because we're talking late 90s, early 2000s.
We're talking, like, just after Casino, but before he got old and fat and weird.
Just scary, mean, you know.
Yeah, big, menacing dude. And speaking of big and menacing, one of my favorite actors who really isn't as big over here in the States, but was like the Arnold Schwarzenegger of France and Europe, Jean Reno.
Hell of a time to be working. What do you want for Christmas?
My two front teeth.
May your wish be granted.
Who's in the Professional.
Absolutely, yeah.
Phenomenal guy.
If there would have been cars in the Professional in one scene, I probably would have put that in my top.
Oh, I just saw that the other night again. That was on. Great.
Own it. Great movie.
Yeah, I love it. So Jean Reno is in it, and some other character actors who kind of blew up later on. Jonathan Pryce, of course, stage actor.
Yeah,
great movie. Great movies in his repertoire, including he's got one where he plays like the Pope. whatever.
If you say so. Okay.
It's on HBO. I forget, Natasha McElhoney, something. She's Irish. She's great.
Okay.
The blonde in that. And then, another guy in there who has, he was in the Thor movies, Skellen Skarsgård.
Oh my
Swedish
God.
Actor.
Dude, you're reaching. Okay.
He's awesome. He's been in some stuff. And then there's another dude in here who did a lot of the driving. He was in Third Watch, if you remember that series. It's about like, I don't know, like, first responders.
You're on a limb, Daryl. I'm sorry. I can't help you.
Somebody out there tell me Third Watch was a good show. Anyways, Skip Suddeth is his name, is the actor's name. But he plays Larry. He's one of the mercenary dudes who's the driver in the movie. And he turns out he's like an amateur racer. I think he was in the SCCA and stuff out east. And he does most of the driving stunts in the film. And so in the scene, basically mercenaries for hire, they get hired and double-crossed. There's like a classic Hitchcock double-cross.
Oh, yeah. No, it's everything's going smoothly about an hour into the movie when things just go completely south. They get into a heist. They figure out they've been screwed. And at that point, they're like running for their lives.
It's awesome because there is a wonderful chase scene. It all kind of does
slow
boil. One
of the best car chases.
Oh, there's
an Audi?
Two.
Audi?
Yeah, there's an Audi S8, which is the big full-size deal with the 4.2 V8 in it. And it's the thing is screaming the whole film. And a couple Citroen, Citroen XCs or some weird crap. And then some Peugeots, and they all get smoked.
Yeah.
But Jean Renault, because he's awesome, is driving like an old Mercedes-Benz. I think it's like the old 6-liter. Or 6.3 liter. It's the giant S series.
Okay.
It's got the big mama motor in it.
Yeah.
And there's some scenes where they're driving
it's
through like
the Princess Diana car.
It's older. It's like a 70s.
Okay. All right.
And there's some scenes where they're driving through, like weaving through the streets of Nice, and this big thing is just, it's having trouble. And it's like hitting buildings, and they're just like going through it. There's also a later scene in the film. Wonderful sounds too. It's not like the fake Hollywood like.
No, this movie
car
was
sounds.
Kind of a precursor to the modern action movie. It seemed like there was a lot of fast cuts to it, and it very cinematic as far as what we expect now. It's very fast.
Yeah.
Before that, we'd be talking about movies like, you know, the Steve McQueen and just like, you know, long takes and awkward, you know, finishes to all the everything worked.
I love it too, being an audio nerd. I love it when they actually go out and they'll gather sound from the cars.
Yeah.
And so when I see a BMW M5.
You want to hear that?
I want to hear that inline six that just screaming.
Crackle.
Yep. And that's what there's a second chase scene later where they go into head on traffic and stuff. It's nuts. And it's a BMW M3 and like some other stuff. It's great. Yeah. Great film.
That was another movie on my honorable mentions, Daryl.
Ronin was?
Yeah, it was. That and the Italian Job was the only other one. And I just.
Oh,
I remember enjoying the Italian Job a lot. It was the second one, the Michael Caine first edition of it. I didn't even know that movie.
Sure.
But then after I watched the remake, I realized that I was an idiot for not knowing the first one.
You know,
is that how it always works?
It sometimes, but I don't think that movie was that big. I think it was kind of a cult movie overseas. Yeah. But definitely that remake was good. Mark Wahlberg. Charlize Theron.
Was Damon in it?
I want to say yes.
I thought he was, too.
There's a couple others.
So it was Wahlberg, for sure.
Yeah. Good stuff, and definitely worth if that's one of those that comes up sometimes in, like, the $4 bin at Wally World or at Menards, and you're like...
See, these should be movies that would be available for streaming on Netflix or Amazon Prime, right?
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I who's watching these movies? This movie's sitting idle somewhere. Nobody. How many people are renting that on Vudu?
Probably not that many.
Zero. Until they listen to this podcast, maybe.
Well, maybe I think that's our role here. Our role is to dust off these classics so that you can enjoy them with your family, pass them down.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone loves It's a Wonderful Life and White Christmas.
Yeah.
But this holiday season, give your family the gift of 7,000 RPM.
Better Off Dead.
Rev
limiters. It's a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
On Christmas Day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, When you're tired of opening presents, you've eaten some lunch, and you're doing nothing, just get Better Off Dead out, and you'll be watching a Christmas movie and a car movie.
It's a lot more family-friendly than, say, Die Hard or Lethal Weapon, which also are Christmas movies.
Which we truly believe in this household, by the way. Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
It is. Yeah. It is. But these are a little more family-friendly. Just ignore the fact that John Cusack is trying to kill himself in Better Off Dead.
That's true.
The whole movie is about suicide. I just want to throw that
out
there.
Dude, there's so many politically incorrect segments in that movie that that movie would never get made today. And that's how you know a movie's a classic. when it's so harsh on the edges, it's so obtuse that it's politically out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they'll never make it again. You got to enjoy the original version. If somebody made that again, they would ruin it.
And I will say, a tie to the center of the universe, Peoria, David Ogden Stiers, who plays the dad.
Oh yeah,
who played Charles Winchester in MASH? He was from Peoria. Or East Peoria, one of the
two. Wow, let's bring it all down. I thought I was pulling it all together with a moment of Musk.
No.
You just brought it all back.
I did. Center of the universe. Everyone's from here.
Now, I think it is kind of funny that you and I both brought in some Chicago ties and Illinois ties. I mean, the Blues Brothers, obviously.
Yeah.
In the Manteen. I don't know if I remembered about that Steve McQueen movie being Illinois, but there was, like I said, there's something Midwestern about it. So
definitely.
I was sucked in by it.
We're gritty people, Eric. We are. We're the type of people that would give you the shirt off our backs, but then we'd ask for it back.
Yeah. So we've talked about ourselves on the 2018 Christmas episode. We told stories of Christmases long ago, and you didn't like it. So this time, we're talking about movies. So if you don't like this, I mean, maybe you can send a suggestion to info@throwingwrenches.com.
You can also send us like some maybe puzzles or some quizzes, something that we can do to occupy our holiday time because we've already seen all these movies. Or you could tell us what movies we should have had on our list.
Absolutely. We'd love some feedback on that. And let me tell you, if you got some better movies and you have a reason why we should have listed those, we will definitely read that out on the next episode.
Absolutely. As we look towards the new year, we look with optimism over the horizon. Or maybe that's just
there's election season, but we'll deal with it.
Dumpster fire of an election. But neither here nor there. We're looking forward to meeting more people, having more listeners to welcome into the family here, and let us know how we're doing. But we really want to talk to some new folks who are part of the car hobby, part of the automobile business, whether it's service repair, whether it's a specialty, whether it's makers, hobbyists, whatever you do. We know there's some really, really cool people out there that are part of car culture, and we'd love to have them on the show. So if you know somebody who would really like do well here,
let's bring them in, man.
Let's do it.
Yeah. 2020 is coming up, and I think that's going to be a big year for Throwing Wrenches.
And
we
of course,
appreciate all your support.
Yeah, we really, truly do. Thanks for sharing our posts, for liking everything, for giving us feedback and Apple reviews. We really, really appreciate all of the kind words and the support of our sponsors as well.
All right. So for 2019, this is Eric Stahl.
I'm Daryl Scott.
And we'll see you in the new year.
Bye-bye.